Everybody hide, KJ4CTD.
On rotation over south of Pickens right now, Wyatt. We're right square in the middle of a string of orange, put it that way.
Really, really heavy rain, top end of Kiwi, right before you get to 11.
According to the Channel 4 radar, they're showing hail symbols, and man, it's been pouring down here. We've got 8700s, and now we're starting to get some lightning, but it's cloud to cloud, it seems like.
In Cleveland right now, and it's just missed it. Not really doing much anything.
Where's Cleveland at?
Cleveland turns off of itself onto itself.
I'm from Kansas. I'm a little slow. You lost me, but that's all right. Yeah, I was surprised to see that rotation in there. And it's pointed towards Greenville, but it's quite a ways west yet. But the main part of the storm seems to be just about right over us up here.
But do you know where Slater Marietta is?
That down in Georgia, ain't it?
Caesar's Head, how about that?
You're way up there north, aren't you? I don't know how many miles up there. Ray, K4SUG, was going to take me up there one time, and we just never got around to it.
Better when we changed the antenna.
No, never been up there to Caesar's Head. I've been up to the WYFF4 TV station there when 9-4 was on it, and then they fenced it off. You can't get up there now because of all the Mexican graffiti all over the places and stuff up there, and the vandalism and the trash.
It was all the beer cans, and it wasn't fenced. But, you know how kids are these days.
Do it in the bed and kick it out with your foot.
Vampires did not take all of your blood.
Oh, there's a lady there. She's a black lady, and her name is Hope, and she is the best in the world. Well, she was busy, and so another black lady took my blood this time, and you never even felt her. But that white lady that did it the last time when the other two weren't there, man, she just jabbed that thing in there, and I got a great big vein in my left arm. One no reason for that. Oh, it really hurt.
That doesn't get me. I don't have any problems with that sort of stuff, except for when they stick the needle in and they miss and they start, you know, rooting around and they're trying to find the vein. That just gives me the be tibbles.
Yeah, I've had that before, and that is the worst. Bernice gets that quite often because her veins don't show up very good. But I was in for lung surgery one time, and they messed it up out in the Oakland Naval Hospital, and they had to do it over, and that was the fourth surgery I'd had. And they'd come in every day and give me a shot of Bicillin, I think they called it, or something like that. Oh man, that hurt. My butt was so sore, I couldn't already stand it. Well, usually I don't mind a shot there in the hip. It hurts less than the arm. But they were drawing blood a couple of times a day. One time in the morning, I can't remember if it was two times a day or just once. And my veins started to collapse. I couldn't stand it. So one day, after about 4 months in the hospital, this corpsman come in and started drawing my blood, and I said, I'm going to give you one chance. And he says, what do you mean? And I said, well, you can have one chance in the left arm, one chance in the right arm, and then I'm going to knock your teeth out if you try to get another one. Well, there was a lady over there with a mop, and I didn't realize she was an officer, and she was a nurse. And she threw that mop down. I can still hear it hit the floor. And she come over to me and says, you, left side, you, right side. He says, hold his arm up. And they took the blood from just right there under that knuckle on your thumb. And Wyatt, I can still hear that noise because that's really tough skin. So I've never, ever give them a problem again about drawing blood.
But, anyway. So, are you in the market for any new radios?
Really? I got a spare UHF, VHF. I've had a long time. I take it out once in a while and put power to it. I need to do that. Well, it looks like the storm's starting to go south of us now and letting up here. It's getting brighter out, so that's a plus. This is Edinger OTR.
Well, I'm currently using my ICOM 7000, and I've been looking at new radios, and it's like, you know, the new Yaesu was holding out a lot of hope, and there's just some issues that I don't know if they can fix them through firmware. There's some things that they can't because they don't have the hardware in the radio, or the 7.5, and I just cannot make a decision.
You know, Kenwood's lacking anymore. Their latest radio, HF, was 890. I thought about that for years, but it's just too much money, and the only reason I'd need it would be a band scope, and because nobody can get mine going for me anymore. But ICOM and Yaesu seem to be at the top of their game. This is an old ICOM 208, knock on wood, and I've never had a bit of trouble with it, and W4DJW's got one. Just the microphone, and so I ordered them off of Amazon, and got Dave one, and I got one years ago, and they're still going. So I don't see how you could go wrong with ICOM.
This radio, I have a pair of D710s, love them. But you know, even on the 2 meter mobile rigs, Kenwood hasn't really done anything lately, and it's almost like they're, do we really want to keep around the amateur radio division or not? I mean, it's kind of hard to tell. But I am looking for something more in the ultra-portable HF QRP range, because I can always throw an amp on a QRP if I need more power, but digital modes don't really need more power.
The best recommendations I've heard of, and I don't know what kind of money you're talking about, of course, on QRP rigs is the Elecraft. If you want a really good reference to go to, NY4G to his website and look at some of the things that he does with the QRP. It's pretty incredible. He does that Summits on the Air, you know, Soda. And one of the most brilliant men I've ever known in my life. And, I mean, he can design antennas. So I'm sure he would be glad to give you that. He's not on 2 meters anymore, hardly ever. But he's very active in the Greer Amateur Radio Club. But he does have websites and a lot of YouTubes.
That's what he's doing. And, you know, I'm kind of topping out at $2,000 because that's really the most I could go, which does include the new Yaesu. And I've only looked at the Elecraft in passing. To me, they strike me as kind of like the Flex radios, except for slightly cheaper. And I mean ever so slightly cheaper.
TR. Well, Wyatt, I can say this, you're far more knowledgeable than I am about that. I've never owned an Elecraft, and I really never had the desire to have one, but the guys that do have them are are very fine radios. I don't say that they aren't. They started out, they were kits, and I just didn't want to mess with it, but I think you can get them put together now, but oh, they're twice that much, you know. So, I don't know. I'd probably go with the ICOMs. I don't see how you can go wrong. A lot of guys are running ICOMs now. I love my Kenwoods only because I'm 77 years old. I don't like menu-driven things anyways, and I don't want to change. So that's why I have my 890 SG and does everything in the world. And there's never been hardly anything at all other than maybe right over next to India that is a little bit hard to get. But other than that, it just is a wonderful radio. But it's not a UHF, VHF. It's just strictly HF. But they were running them for, I think, $14.99 the other day, and they're usually $16-something. But that's Kenwood.
And by the way, I'm not a fanboy for any manufacturer, so, you know, I have no definitive brand loyalty. But I do have my TS2000 that I do need to get repaired at some freaking point in time. I just, every time I think about it, I'm like driving down the road, and then I forget by the time I get home. But I do have the ICOM 7000, which has been a very good radio. I have not had good luck with ICOM handy talkies in the ham world. They make a very good radio in aviation. And then I've had exactly one Yaesu handy talkie. And actually, all three of my handy talkies from each manufacturer, they've all had some kind of issue, and I've all had to repair them.
Front ends on the Yaesus have always been really, really quality. When I used to use handy talkies a lot, heck, I started out with a Radio Shack HTX-202, and my boss stole that from me the last year I worked in a hospital up in back home. And I just have had the issues ever since. I had a real nice one that my nephew that flies 787s. It was a real compact one, and one day I set it up on top of the car and then got in the car and backed out, and the neighbor stole it, I'm sure. And because the time I went back, it was gone. And I always regretted that. It was a nice handy talkie. Very small. But overall, I don't want any handy talkies. There is a place over there in Georgia that is a repair place, and I'm sure you're aware of it. A lot of guys have taken their radios. I don't know if they do that one or not. I don't like HF rigs with VHF, UHF on them. But that TS-2000 has been wonderful for a lot of guys. But if you lose one, you lose them all. And I just don't like that.
That Airband handy-talkie I have on me, and it's turned up. It is actually a Yaesu. I was thinking it was a Garmin. But it's a Yaesu, and it's actually been a very good handy talkie. Haven't had to repair it yet.
I think the 7800 or 7900, something like that. And they just been wonderful, but they're mobile units. And I just leave them set on 15 watts around here, and it just does everything I want it to do. It's dual. They're dual band, but they don't display both at once. Phil, I'm trying to think of his call sign on there. He has one of the really nicest Yaesus I've ever seen. And the display register on it's incredible and displays both bands and that. Last time I seen him, before NGU, North Greenville University, he had that one put in several years ago on his Mercedes, his old Mercedes. But I think since then he's reinstalled it in a newer car. But, boy, they got some beautiful display registers on those Yaesus now.
Yeah, you know, got a birthday coming up, want to buy a radio. Want to buy something fun to play with. KJ4CJD.
I don't blame you. Well, like I said, on my HF, I just don't want to change, mainly because the fact that you got to learn, well, the menus are similar, being it's Kenwood, but really don't get that much, and when they're operating split, I don't have a problem figuring out what the split is. I've done it so many years, but it was really nice to see it on that, you know, LCD screen sitting next to the radio, a 20-some-inch screen. But there's only one person I know that knows how to install that, and I paid another guy to do it twice, and he never did get it done, so I just give up on it.
Right now, speaking of Ariel and N4YG and all those people, I am actually sitting at North Greenville University right now. And it seems like there's at least one radio that you could hook an external monitor to. So if you want to have yourself, you know, I don't know why you would need a 50-inch monitor, but, yeah, okay.
Break in there. Yeah, if it's got a connection to the IF up there, but my 590SG does not. And there is a way that you can do it yourself, but there's no way I'm getting into that surface mount technology stuff and trying to do that. Was there somebody else in there? This is N0TR. Think what?
Okay. Well, I'm kind of like you. You know, I've gotten past. I'm fine with through hole. I don't really want to mess with surface mount. But I don't know anything about how to do that, so I just don't.
Well, it's pretty expensive just buying the tools and that, you know, and I've repaired circuit boards down to the board level for, oh gosh, 50 years, but that surface mount, that's a different world altogether, and the only thing I ever made out of it was a banded microwave receiver. So years and years ago, there was a television station in our area up there that broadcast from, I think it was coming out of Chanute or Carthage, Missouri or someplace. And I took the an 18-inch fan guard that I had, half of one, and I mounted this coffee can, and I built this, well, I bought the kit, and it was surface mount. Boy, that stuff, I had to hammer it with a toothpick, you know, and get it in position. Nowadays, they got a lot of better ways of doing it, you know, and they use ultraviolet and stuff to put a certain glue to hold the pieces down and whatnot. But I never did even memorize the nomenclature of each little chip. I know what a resistor looks like, and a capacitor, and a transistor, and diodes and stuff, but I just don't care to mess with it. Thank God I got pretty steady hands yet, and I feel very blessed to have that at my age.
Resistors, it's like, okay, dig out the microscope, because you can't see it, and you can only know that the part is really the part if you can actually read the lettering on the resistor, but otherwise you'll have to go by the schematic. And I have learned over the years that that is not always the case. The schematic does not always agree.
I can relate to that. Yeah, over the years, I went from real blueprints that were blue on some of the oldest machines that were made in the 40s. And then I had a French mill that would turn apart 27-foot and had all the prints were in French. And the master was, oh, I'd say 6 feet long and 2 feet wide. And then it had a Swedish Amplodyne generating set on it. And 100 horsepower, 480 volt DC motor in the pit. And I forget how many exciters were on it and why it, on that Amplodyne generating set. I think four. Boy, I didn't read French, so I thought, well, I'll be smart and I'll buy a French dictionary. No, the machine tool language was different than the nomenclature on the blueprints. So I just kind of had to hoof it, you know.
Tom, I butchered your call, Tom. Yeah, I seems like the only blueprints I saw, they were kind of like a baby blue. They weren't a true deep blue. Don't know why they changed.
A lot of the prints that they did down in our engineering department at the other plant, which was about 10 blocks south of us, or 13 blocks, I think, they had 600 people working there one time, and they were sepia prints, and boy, those things stunk from the ammonia, and they were huge. Mostly structural blueprints, but when they shut that plant down, I had the keys and the security for it and all of that while they were getting rid of stuff, and there was four of them ultraviolet 4-foot light bulbs left, kind of like an F-40 T-12 CW, you know, and but they were ultraviolet. So I made a bug zapper that had 4-foot light bulbs in it, Wyatt, and my neighbor accused me of killing cats and stuff out in the backyard. I put a 12,000-volt neon transformer on it. And every time that a bug would go in there, like a moth or a butterfly or something, it would start out at the bottom like a Jacob's ladder and go all the way to the top, and it'd just blank out your TV set.
Mom, you were terrible in your younger ages. Well, I remember Daniel, which is Floor Daniel. Can't remember if there's somebody else now or not. But when they were working, we provided them with the HP line plotters. And, you know, it just comes with a big spool of paper that's about 4 feet wide. And that's how they printed out all their drawings once AutoCAD came onto the scene.
Just a couple of words you said.
Now, Floor Daniel, who may be somebody else now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I got a friend that is he's the boss of a group of lawyers at Fleur. I guess that's a huge corporation. I really don't know much about it, but he goes all over the world all the time, Australia. In fact, he got his pilot's license also in Australia. He had a 172 that he took us down to Clemson in just for a ride one day, and Bernice and I planned on the way in the university over the stadium, which at that time I didn't realize how important it was because we hadn't been here that long. But he's got a 210 now, which is, I guess, a pretty nice plane.
That sounds like a twin. Is that a twin? I don't know off the top of my head.
No, it's not. I don't know much about it. The 172 and the 152s, of course, is the only ones I know very much about, and I'm no expert on them. But I think it's a 210. It's, you know, a little better plane, but being the manager of, you know, of a group of lawyers, I'm sure he gets paid very well. And that's a big corporation.
You can make me go look that up when I get home. Which hopefully will be sometime today, but I don't know. I'm stuck behind a box truck that's scared to drive more than 15 miles an hour below the speed limit.
I hate being behind something I can't see around. I don't want to always have to be the first one out ahead of the crowd, but I don't like being behind a big van or something. I really don't feel safe back there. And they're also real bad about breaking windshields. This is N0TR.
The 414, and there's like exactly one passing zone, but it's in the narrow stretch of the road. And, you know, Passing a hamster car is not an issue, but I don't want to pass a box truck.
The Cessna 210 Centurion is a six-seat, high-performance, retractable gear, single-engine, high-wing, general aviation light aircraft, first flown January 1957. It was produced until 1986. And I know he said that he could land down at GSP with 250 feet visibility. But I do know he used to send me these YouTubes or where they use those GoPro cameras when he was flying in Australia. And I had his tail number for a while. I could follow where all he went. He's kind of to himself type of guy.
Don't know that I've seen the 210. I mean, you know, I usually see 172s or 152s or F-16s or helicopters. So I guess he doesn't come out to Donaldson a lot.
Well, he's at the downtown airport where we went to meet him when we went with him. It says the aircraft has a maximum operating altitude of 17,300 feet. It's not pressurized, though. I know it isn't, so I wouldn't want to be there. A normal crew of 170 knots, which is 196 miles an hour. And I think it says, and a 440NM / 506 SM seats full range. So that's a pretty good description. It looks like any other Cessna, really, except it's retractable. In the 210 in the 1980s, Cessna stopping production of most piston engine aircraft during this time. The Cessna 210 is rumored to be too complex to resume production nowadays. I used to drive by there when I worked at Learjet, and when I went out to my aunt and uncle's out there a lot in Wichita, the building they did the single engine ones there was right on the highway as you're going into Wichita. And the tails were coming out through a curtain on all of the planes that they were building at the time, I guess.
Anybody that is actively building equivalent to 172s, they pretty much all stopped at the end of the 80s. And, I mean, there are people still building twin engines, and, of course, lots of people building jets. But I don't know where, and there's some kit built stuff that people are turning out. But I don't know anybody that makes equivalent trainer aircraft anymore. Everything's old.
Think of Be Serious, and those are like $800,000 or so, I think, now. And it says, what's the difference between a 172 and a 210? It's an awesome traveler. The 210 is much faster, carries 5 passengers, and can fly very high, but it's a complex, high-performance aircraft, costly to operate, costlier to maintain. The 172 is slower, but much more forgiving and much cheaper to operate and maintain. I'll bet it is. I could have bought one of those one time for $30,000. Oh, I'd hate to think what they are now. I met a guy in Sam's Club up in Kansas, and he offered to, he was a, I think a traveling minister or something, and he just had it all redone, new seats, new paint, the whole nine yards, and the major overhaul. He says, I'll sell it to you for $30,000, Tom. I never know way I could afford it back then, and I was, there's no way that I could get a pilot's license now with my help.
Anyway, Tom, I am almost destinated, so I'll make this my final in 73's tooth, and hope you have a good rest of your weekend. KJ4 CCD, clear on your final.
Thank you, Wyatt. It says there's a 210 have a pressurized cabin. A turboprop one does with 310 horse. Boy, I flew in a Bonanza once and had 280 horse, I think. Man, it was a hot rod. It really, really done great out in Wichita. And the nephew came over and picked us up. He now is a captain on 787s. See you later, Wyatt. KJ4 CTD N0 LTR 73.